The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
More customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors? Not just across town, but across the country. How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Global Reach. This is a show that helps your business find opportunities, manage risks, and develop strategies for winning in world markets. Millennials, money, marketing, branding, this week's show has it all. And my guest this week, entrepreneur Lisa Halpern, CEO of Kaboo Life, is absolutely the perfect person to help us figure out how to reach the millennials. Welcome to Global Reach, Lisa.
Thanks, Tay. It's great to be here.
Kaboo is a social banking and financial literacy startup. It focuses on bringing young people closer to their money. Its Know Your Money platform creates and builds community around money management with original content, financial analytics engine, and social features and functionality that engage young people to save, spend, and give their money smarter. This week at NYPAY, an organization I've spoken about in the past, the New York-based professional organization for payment industry leaders, I moderated a panel on consumer financial services after the meltdown, products for the post-2008 consumer, and Lisa was one of our panelists, and we had a stellar reception. So I know this show is going to be full of really valuable insights on the state of the relationship between young people and money. Lisa, what was your inspiration for founding Kaboo?
It comes probably from two places. One is my background was in trust and estates and tax, and I was working with a number of high net worth individuals, parents and grandparents, and they were trying to teach their kids about money, and there was a complete disconnect because young people socialize differently, they interact with technology differently, and when it came to banking, it just seemed archaic to them. Why do I have to walk into a bank? It should just be, my money should just be by my side at all times. And so I thought that there was a growing opportunity, an opportunity there, and dealing with my own nieces and nephews and what their expectations were and what they thought that they wanted and what they could get were very different from what I think the reality was and their relationship with money. So I thought there was an opportunity, and we went out and we started to build a customer experience from the customer, parents, and the youth market backwards.
You did a lot of research prior to founding Kaboo. So you were talking about going out, talking to parents, young people. What are the key findings you had about the state of the relationship between millennials and Gen Z and their money?
It's changed over time. So when we first started, it was before the CARD Act, where people were going into college with a credit card, and that was their first introduction to plastic. Today, they're going in with a debit card, and a perception is that they are being introduced to some sort of plastic, usually a debit product, somewhere in high school. The parents, and this has remained consistent throughout, is they're feeling in general is, I don't know what I'm doing with my own money. How am I supposed to teach my kids? So, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
before
interesting.
We go on, what was the CARD Act again?
So the CARD Act
some of our audience may not know. We have an international audience here.
I'm sorry. Yes. So I'm most of what I'm going to say today is based on our U.S. findings, and we're live in the U.S. market, and we also have had some exposure to the U.K. market as well. So that's really where I'm going to be coming from. But I think that consistently behaviors of young people there are certain things that can be global. But the CARD Act is... In February of 2010, banks could no longer go on campuses and push a credit card. So today, you now need to be either over the age of 21, or if you're not 21, if you're under the age of 21, you either need an independent source of income, or it needs to be co-signed by a parent. So that really significantly changed the way that banks market a financial product. In the old days, you know, before 2010, it was with a credit card.
Okay. So what did you find are kind of the principal drivers for the way millennials and Gen Z view money? I suspect it's differently from the way we do.
I think that they expect it, they have an expectation, just like their music and other things, is that it should be free. So number one is they don't feel that they should be paying for something when it's their money. Two is the unexpected fee and support. They don't want surprises. They believe that you should just be able to speak straight and be able to, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And they're not loyal when it comes to when they get hit with a fee. They'll go switch.
Interesting. I think this dislike of surprises, particularly financial surprises, may not be unique to the millennials. So is that why they're less prone to set up a relationship with a bank or a traditional credit card? This dislike of fees, wanting things to be free, wanting things to be easy to access?
I think it comes from two places. One is watching their parents and their parents struggle with money and making those decisions. 90% of young people make, when it comes to a financial decision, go rely on their parents. Two is their association with brands. So banks in the media have not always had the best of in the news. You know, they're seeing these big bank brand names. Their association with brands are personal. So when they are going to say, I remember I used to say my bank, and it was like a personal thing. And it was my bank because I knew the teller. I knew who it was. Today, I don't have the same feeling about my bank. My bank is just a place that I need to use to store my money. On the younger demographic, when they put a my before something, it has more meaning than just the bank. It has to do something for them. And I think that that's important of where things are going as far as their association with money.
That's a really interesting point. How much of that is driven by social media? Twitter, Facebook, and like, what's the new Facebook replacement?
Well, their decisions are made based on their community, their friends, and their family. So that's more, if their friends are saying, I just had a great experience, you know, at XYZ Bank, they're more likely to trust that and to move forward with that and to make a decision based on that versus an advertisement.
I've seen statistics that at least millennials and Gen Z trust their friends' recommendations more than they trust any ad. Possibly not a bad approach.
But when it comes to a financial decision, it's a little bit different. It's interesting, yes, but they may not trust their friends when it comes to a financial decision. They may trust their parents or what their parents have done. So it really depends on where in the communication, and what Kabu is doing is we're looking to ignite conversations around money, and even in the user experience, we will give them aha moments. You know, so we will say, Tay, you're bringing in more money than you're taking out. That's a great job and keep up the good work. And so it's not speaking at you, but it's giving you the supportive advice that you need to then make your next decision.
What is it that I would have to do on Kaboo for you to give me that kind of advice? What would provoke it?
So we're first and foremost a technology company. So what we do is we analyze both your transactional behavior, the things that you're actually doing of your past events, where you're swiping your card and things like that, plus where what you're saving for, so what goals you're creating. When you are looking at charitable and you know, donating, things like that. So we kind of look at all of your life of where you're interacting within our platform.
So I would post all that on the Kaboo website.
Hmm?
I would post all that information on the Kaboo website.
It's by your behaviors of what you're doing within our platform that we're then able to drive to you personalized engagement.
Tell me, what are the elements of the platform? So our listeners get an idea really more concrete about what we're talking about.
So we started the company, as you know, to really change the way that people interact with their money. And what we do today is we give you a way to spend your money, save your money, and give your money under one complete solution, both online and mobile.
Mm.
And so you get a way to spend your money. We don't offer overdrafts, so you can never spend more than you actually have. There's a completely walled-off component where not only is it saving, but you're more likely to save when you have a personalized goal. You can create your own goals that make sense for you, and you can share those things with your friends and your family on Facebook, Twitter, email, whatever. And you could start a conversation around the things that are important to you. So it's no longer about compounded interest. It's about actually being able to make the decisions that get you to attain and achieve what your aspirations are to do in your life, whatever that may be. This demographic prides themselves more or is driven more by what they've accomplished in life versus how much money they have in their wallet.
Interesting. So I would assume you've got adequate privacy guards. So would it be the only members of Kaboo and members that or people that your members designate can see all that information?
Yeah, yes. There is, we don't share data. We don't give out email addresses or anything like that. We don't share personalized data. A consumer, a user of the platform would select what could be private and what they share. And what's public and what to share. So you really determine for yourself and who you're sharing that with.
So if I were just cruising around the internet, I couldn't go onto the Kaboo site and actually tap into their posts or anything?
No. We are playing around with an idea, interesting that you say that. So let's say I have a public goal for a car. And I want to make that public versus private. We're thinking about introducing an idea where Tay can now search for me. You know that I have a Kaboo account. So you can put in, you know, lisa@kaboo.com and given one or two other security to confirm that needs me, you can then see my public goals. So, you know, it's my birthday. You can now start to search and see what I'm actually saving for, that you can contribute directly towards those things.
Oh, that's interesting. The reason I asked that question was a few years ago I did a study on small business finance, and it was at a time where American Express had pioneered the open site for small business to post all kinds of information and create a community on, and a lot of banks did, and so much what was posted was actually completely open to the public that you could do market research on all the sites. So I was wondering about the Kaboo, but that's really interesting. We've got to go to break right now. When we get back, I want to talk more about what the drivers are for millennials and the way they act, because I think that's so important, and how they were impacted by their parents' struggles during the meltdown, what you found out from the conference that you recently were a panelist at in London on the future of finance, and a whole bunch of other things. So don't go away. We're just getting started here.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. This is your host, Tay Revez, and I'm here with my guest, Lisa Halpern, founder and CEO of Kibu Life, which is a really, really interesting site and a pioneer in dealing with millennials and their money. Lisa, well, before we went to break, I wanted to ask you, how much, you said that kids are really, the chief influencer is the parents. How much have they been influenced by their parents' struggle in the post-2008 meltdown?
Two things that we're seeing a difference is, number one, parents are more likely to talk about it now, where before they weren't. So if they can't afford something, it's easier for them to talk about it and to say, you know, we can't go on this vacation this year because we can't afford it. So they're growing up with those real life answers. Where in the past they may not have been. And you're seeing a difference of their spending behaviors, of millennials. And the millennials is a very big demographic, so we're seeing a difference between, at which graduation ages they are. I don't know if that's, but their nature, the nurture and what parents are teaching their kids. They're finding that they feel morally responsible to teach their kids about money.
Now, who's more sophisticated, though, kids and parents? Who teaches who about money?
We're seeing a little bit of a shift that may come out of socioeconomic or being a tech-savvy generation is or dependent on tech. is that they have access. So we're starting to see a little bit of a shift in some of our content is this, is that young people are starting to teach their kids about, starting to teach their parents about money. Whether it's about, I just created this way to save and here's how I'm doing. And I'm automatically, every time I deposit money, I'm automatically funding it towards my computer goal. And so we're starting to have the kids talk to their parents about, well, maybe you should try this. And they're doing it because they have access to it on the technology. But typically and traditionally, it's been the parents teaching their kids.
You mentioned the word graduation, which brings to mind the fact that probably the most financially challenged group within the demographic are college students. What do you say? I mean, we talk now about the trillion-dollar massive debt load that U.S. college students and college graduates have in an aggregate, and that the average student is graduating with $26,000 in debt, which I have to say I have a great feeling for graduating with college debt, because when I graduated I had about $10,000, which given the time differential was actually probably a little more than $26,000 in the money of that time. But anyway, what are you seeing for that particular subgroup?
It goes two places. Number one, they are, when you look at what they're, I read a survey once where what keeps them awake at night or what some of their fears are, and it's debt. It's not having enough money for retirement. It's those things are really those weighty things that weigh them down. However, they're also the most optimistic. So they do think that they're going to have a better life than their parents.
Even with the tight job market that they're graduating into.
Yeah. You know, internships, and it's looked at as their gateway to their next job, and they believe it will get better. Especially students that are on the younger, the sophomores now.
Are you seeing a big difference between the students who go to the private universities here and those who are in the publicly funded schools, the community colleges, the public universities?
We do. The students in the private universities are more likely not to care about budgeting as much, because most of their money is, they still get a lot of their money from their parents. Mm. And they think whenever they run out, they'll just get it from their parents. A lot of the
parent
public
is ATM.
Have jobs, and they will, they'll be dependent on that, and they don't have their parents as that support system. And so we find them using, wanting and being attracted to things on Kaboo because they have a way to see where their money's going, being able to set up goals, even just for spring break, even just for things that are on a shorter term that they want to achieve.
A lot of them are also working. Is Kaboo time-saving for them as well?
Time-saving?
Well, I was thinking time is precious. Does it take a lot of time to use your tools and community?
No. We do a lot of it. A lot of the budgeting and things like that we do automatically, so they'll just see it. It's part of where, because we're so new, we're constantly changing and iterating based on the consumer feedback. And so things that we thought would work may not work, and things that we do. So budgeting is a great example where we're starting to see that people don't want to go to a separate section. Nobody really cares about it. But if it's incorporated into your statement, it's a big difference, and they do want to see it. So it is important.
That's really interesting. I think it's a fascinating insight on the way to deal with the demographic. You mentioned that different classes have different approaches to money, and I know when Tuesday night you said that the way that 2012's view spending, the class of 2012, is very different from the way the class of 2015 is looking at spending. What are those differences?
The classes, like 2010, 2012, it's more, their questions are more, how expensive is this? They're more attracted to the brand the celebrity status or the brand signature of it, whether it's Gucci or, you know, if there's a celebrity on it. But in the class of 2015, it's more of how new is this? How cool is this? What can I personalize it? What's the performance? And so it's a little bit, it's different. So you start to see brands like Tom's Shoes and Free People and Warby Parker, all of these brands that are so much more than glasses or shoes. They are, when you wear these items, it represents more than just what's on your feet. It's that you've actually done something. And so it's about your personal brand, the consumer's personal brand that they're creating, that these shoes or glasses or shirts or whatever is really just a part of, woven in piece of their own personal brand.
Is a personal brand different from my going around with a T-shirt that says M&M's or Coca-Cola? But you're talking about something like a Tom's Shoes, which has a big part of that is a donation of a pair of shoes, you know, donation of shoes overseas for every pair you buy. So is this charity aspect, the giving aspect, important when they're making a relationship with the brand?
Yes. So for Tom's Shoes, definitely. For some, it could be about recycling. You know, it doesn't matter, but it's something that's more than just the product that you're putting on.
So it's something to do with a cause, with community service, mm-hmm. with the broader community. That's really interesting. We had Darcy Goodwin on here a few weeks ago, and she had just come back from China. And we were talking really about corporate communications and corporate hiring. And something that companies were finding in China was when they wanted to hire China's elite students, the students really cared that the companies were doing some kind of community service, community giving, and community team building. And that was very important in their decision which employer to hire. Now, let me ask you, internationally, you were at this conference in London on the future of finance, and you were at another one as well where you talked to international bankers. So how much are we seeing this? If American youth are looking at this giving component, Chinese youth are looking at the giving component, how universal is this? What are we seeing here?
From within the larger banks, and I can only speak on the UK side, is that they're recognizing the youth market as an opportunity that they want to acquire or that they want to attract, and that it needs to be more than just the products that they're pushing. So they're seeing it as how come they're not, you know, walking through a door, or how come they're leaving when they get hit with a fee, and they're looking at ways to broaden that. Yeah, but it comes down to, and what we really talked about in the future of finance, of how do you really meet the needs of educating a consumer? And I think it comes down to trust and ethics. And unfortunately, regulations usually come out of a problem that was caused. And so it's usually like in the aftermath. And the conference is really around how do we move forward and how do we create a new playing field? And that's a hard question. It's a hard question, but I know that the banks are looking beyond their own products. Whether it's in giving and financial literacy, trying to incorporate it into the overall customer experience instead of into some side contest or project.
I think a lot of the banks and a lot of the traditional cards, and in fact a lot of traditional consumer products, are looking at how do they deal with this generation, because it is a very different generation that seems to be attached to their communications devices. We've got about 1 minute to break. What was the one most important thing you got out of the panel you were on at the Future of Finance conference?
The one most important thing I think that we got out of it is that no one's really figured this out, and that they're really, the academia, the regulators, the banks, is they want to be sitting at the table and that they want to figure it out. So that was important. Can we all agree on how to start it and how to get this going? I'm not sure. There is a drive to put more education in schools, but I would say that we need to get, unless it's relevant to people, to young people, and putting a product alongside of it, it's going to be really hard to change a behavior.
Okay, we've got to go to break now. When we get back, we're going to look more at the international insights that Lisa got from those conferences, and also more about what leads people to distrust brands. Why are they more comfortable with alternative financial products, and what kinds of products than we've all been using? And really, how do you reach this generation? So, oh yeah, and whether the millennials and Generation Z are going to be comfortable letting everything hang out on the web as they've been doing. So don't go away.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick-and-mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and, of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel. From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. This is your host, Tay Revez, and I'm here with my guest, Lisa Halpern, founder and CEO of Kaboo Life. Lisa, during the break, we were talking about building credit, that the millennials, Gen Z, have a completely different attitude towards building credit. For me, it was tremendously important. For almost all of the preceding generations, building credit, your credit score was tremendously important. What's with the new generation?
Well, the new generation, they're staying in school longer, so they're taking on average 6 years to graduate, or they're living at home longer. It's harder to get jobs. Because of all, they've got more student debt. Because of all these things, the reasons of why you'd need credit aren't as important. So they're not saving for the, they don't need the car or the house, and all of those things seem so far away. And so building their credit seems more removed and maybe not as important. However, when they need it, they wish that they had it. I don't think it's that they don't want it.
Is it that they've made the big purchase, at least the ones who've gone to college, they've kind of made the big purchase for now, and they've got to somehow get that off their back, get that monkey off their backs, before they can think about going for the house or the car?
Maybe. Maybe. I also think that they're just life is the way that it is, where they don't have an expectation, maybe even to ever own a car. So we all got licenses, driver's license at an early age, but now, you know, more people are living in urban places. You've got more people riding their bikes and public transportation and all those things. So those needs aren't there. Purchasing a home, you've got technology and different alternatives that, whether it's living at home, having roommates, you're taking longer to get married or to even have a child. So all those things are further away.
Now, that has huge implications for the entire economy. And it's not just here, because in Europe, they're also having huge youth unemployment. So a lot more living at home. But in terms of postponing the home purchase, postponing a car purchase, living in urban areas, and we did a show on mass urbanization showing that worldwide we're going to see urbanization increase 15 or 20% within the next 15 years. I mean, does that mean that is the global car industry going to shrink? Are they going to have to, you know, repurpose and find new areas to manufacture in? Are we going to see the car manufacturers, you know, go for motorbikes? What does that mean for the kind of housing that's going to be designed going forward?
We're already seeing the sizes of cars shrink, right? So the smart car, and they're getting smaller and smaller to be able to fit into these urban locations.
That's true, to find a parking spot.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And we're seeing that the purchases are smaller. You know, millennials are making smaller purchases, so it's not that they're not purchasing, and we should be clear about that. It's that the big ticket items just aren't necessary or maybe aren't even important. And that goes down to how they define themselves and where they represent. It's more of their experiences and the bonds that they've created. And maybe that's why it makes sense to have roommates for longer. And it's how they build their community and they associate within that community.
So I'm going to have my purchase goals, at least near term, not the house or the car, but the iPad. And maybe the vacation.
Or to go on a trip, you know, or to take a year off and go on a trip. We're seeing more and more high school students take that gap year than ever before, meaning take a year off and go do something before they go to school.
What are they doing? Are they doing community service? Are they just getting jobs so they can...
They could be living in Ecuador. No, when I define gap year, it's usually an experience they're having, that they go and they do, whether it's in Ecuador or there's all sorts of gap year programs that are out there, that it's a whole industry.
It's interesting. Last weekend I was at the reunion for my high school, Hunter College High School, and they've actually allowed some of the seniors to almost have a virtual gap year. So they're not in classes. They're around New York City, working on internships and a variety of experiences instead of actually spending the time in classes, which was unheard of even 10 years ago for a senior in a public high school to do that.
Right.
So really we're talking about products, whether they're financial services products or whether they're other consumer products. We're looking at really two emerging classes of products, experiential products and community-based products, and they kind of will overlap. Is that what you're talking about coming out of the research you've done?
Yeah, and also the number. So because technology is changing your wallet, you don't need as many cards in that wallet. And so, and because the lifestyle and the decisions are changing, your need for multiple cards aren't as big.
It's interesting. My friend Deborah Baxley was also on the panel with you, and her company, Capgemini, does this annual payments report, and they found that the average number of cards in a wallet is down to 3, which is amazing because only 4 years ago I was doing this work on co-branded and affinity cards, and the average numbers had grown from 4 or 5 up to 7 and 8. And the fact that that's collapsed so much within just a 4 or 5 year period is outstanding. I mean, that's a huge tectonic shift if you happen to be in the payments industry or you happen to be trying to co-brand something.
Yeah, and right on down to our design. So the core of our card, I don't think I showed it to you when we were in person, but the core of our card is bright orange. And we did it that way because when you... People don't really have that.
Tell them what
normal
your card is.
Wallet
because
anymore.
I know what it is, but the audience doesn't.
What is?
When you're talking about your card, what's the card?
Oh, the card. So your debit card with Kabu is actually the core of it. When you put it on its side, is bright orange instead of all the other ones are all white. So you see it, and it stands out from the rest. When you put it in its thin side.
And that's the other huge shift is there's been a shift from credit cards to debit cards and a spike in the use of prepaid cards.
Right.
So do you get any feedback on kind of how your cards are being used, kind of metadata on what purchase frequency is, what kinds of products they're being used for?
We're still in its very early stages, so we're still in a, I guess, alpha launch phase, in a private phase, so we haven't opened up to the public yet. We are seeing, spending in the student market of around $400 a month. We're seeing the frequency of load, so that's really where we're getting our data from, of where the parents are coming in and things like that. But in real time, I have a nephew who goes to Syracuse, which is a university in New York, and he is a junior. He's going into his junior year. And he said, he's like, Aunt Lisa, before I had Kabu, I had no idea how much I was spending. Now I'm really cheap. And he said it actually in a positive way, that being cheap was cool, which I laugh at. But it was interesting for me to see how he used his traditional debit card and how he used Kabu.
So how are banks responding to this? I was thinking, we were talking about brands and distrust of brands, and this kind of a growing distrust of traditional brands among the millennials and the Gen Z. Are the banks all going to have to rebrand, come up with new brands to reach this demographic?
My real feedback working with the banks, it comes into two camps. And working with the banks here in the U.S. as well as in the U.K., two things come out of it. One side, and it depends really on where your brand is, and the U.K. is an interesting market because there's really only 5 major banks there. There isn't a lot of alternative banking products, and so the choices are very limited, and they're all fighting for a market share. And hands down, all of the research is coming to, I don't want to walk into the bank to get advice. I'm not going to walk into the bank to get my financial advice. And from within the market, so with the student market, and I just heard a panel of students speaking about where they get their financial advice just today. And they feel that they go and they ask a question, they're not getting the answer that they need, and so they stop. They just don't bother. But they would if they were going to get the support that they need. The banks are saying, well, we know that the youth market doesn't want to walk into our branches or call us to get advice. And so there's clearly a disconnect. some of the banks, of the major top five in the UK, some are saying, well, there needs to be a whole new brand. In order to meet the needs of this demographic, we need to have a whole new face. Some of the banks are saying, you know what? We still have an established good brand. People know who we are. We just need to adapt to the needs of this consumer. And so we're seeing it across the board in little, you know, both ways.
Okay. We've got to go to break now. When we come back, I want to get into this adaptation and kind of what some of the banks are doing, what some of the other players in the market are doing. So don't go away. We've got plenty more to come.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in seven countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait. They just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. Again, this is your host, Tay Revez, and I am here with Lisa Halpern, who is the CEO of the pioneering Kivu Life, a banking and social engagement site aimed at the youth market. Lisa, when we were in the break, we were talking about the fact about communication. How do companies need to communicate with the Gen Zs, with the millennials? It's different because they communicate with each other differently. So
they communicate
with the factors that we need to know about, whether we're financial services or consumer goods.
Not only do they communicate with each other differently, and they trust their brands differently, but they're on multiple devices at once. And so to be able to communicate on that mobile phone or a tablet or what you do on your computer is very, very different. And what the expectation is give me just what I need to know and take out all the noise. Why do you have to make it so complicated? And so we work really, really hard to boil down information, to give them in those bite-sized pieces so that they can have those takeaways and be able to then go move on.
I know when I get communications from my bank, and I've got four of them, but just for one example, they all want me to go paperless, which I'd be perfectly willing to do because I store everything electronically. But they'll want me to sign these extensive agreements, and they come out. I print them out. They're 14 pages, 18 pages, 20 pages of small type that just go on. And by the time I've gotten through two pages, I don't know what I'm reading. I mean, I should, but it's sort of meager. My eyes glaze over. And so I've put off doing that. And I can imagine that younger people who read a lot less than we do and really are looking at Twitter can't possibly relate to that kind of thing. So how do you set up a content that's visually appealing?
That's a really good question. And that also is twofold. One is you'll see regulation coming out now. So you've got the governments, and I can only speak to the UK and the US, that are really focused on disclosures and how do you communicate to customers so that it's not deceptive and they can understand it straight up. So what we do and what we're working on our side and talking to the regulators about is when you take that agreement or those disclosures, is take all the legal stuff and then along the side say, here's what it means to you. That very, very short understanding so that you can not only find the information when you need to read the fine print, but that you feel like you know what you're getting into when you're signing off on it.
I think that's important. Frankly, I think it's a lesson that banks could learn for dealing with other generations besides just the millennials and the Gen Z.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot. And so I think that's one way on the heavy stuff. But then there's just your balance. You know, being able to see on a top line of here's what you started at, here's your money in, here's it's at, this is what's pending, and here's what you actually have to spend right now. And make it that simple. One of the feedback rates we're getting is, why does it have to be so hard? Why don't you just tell me what my balance is so I can move on? I thought I knew what my balance is. How come I have an overdraft? They don't really understand.
That they've made other commitments.
They're expecting a black and white answer.
Yeah.
So one of the banks that we were working with has 17 different versions of a balance at every time, at any given time.
Which is insane. I know I get incredibly frustrated trying to navigate through some of the sites that looking for basic, simple information.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find.
And if things aren't in real time and they're batched nightly, so what you're viewing on your screen isn't actually what you have.
That too. So what are some examples of product? Now, we talked about how you've responded to it. How are some of the other financial services companies responding to the needs of the millennials? I know we had a representative from Amex at the panel, and they have their Serve platform and have a deal with Chegg on how to finance textbooks. But you know more about that than I do.
Yeah, Chegg is a really cool company. They're a rental textbook market because they realize that people actually don't want to buy and own these textbooks, so you can rent them and then send them back. And the relationship, I don't work for Amex, I don't know specific, but they did a deal with Chegg where you can pay with your Serve. I'm assuming it's your Serve card or some Amex as a way to pay for that rental textbook. But it's a way for Amex to reach that youth demographic. And the Serve product is an interesting product, similar to how Kaboo is on a prepaid platform.
It's an interesting, and I think today, because you can scan or take a photograph of the textbook, there's less need to kind of go in there and underline and make notes on the textbook.
Right.
One of the things that we've seen over the past few years is the disappearance of privacy. The millennials, the Gen Z, they put everything about their lives, sometimes minute by minute, up on Facebook, you know, Twitter, some of the others. Is that going to stay? Is all that information, are they going to continue to be that comfortable about letting it all hang out?
I think it's what you're sharing. There, with the rise of identity theft, and the millennial demographic is the hardest hit of identity theft. So they have a protection of their they want to protect. I think they're more aware, especially in the younger side, they're more aware of their passwords and their bank account information. But you would be surprised the amount of people on Twitter who are taking pictures of their debit card and posting them on Twitter. It's amazing. So what you share, I think people will want to share and build community about experiences, as we talked about, and bonds, maybe even locations and things like that. But we're starting to see, or we do see, a protection of the stuff that's personal to you. Right now, your 1,000 friends on Facebook, there is a realization that you don't have that many real world friends versus your Facebook friends. Those lines are separate.
So let me ask you something.
In the community, they have different levels of those, of what they share within their Facebook communities.
So differentiated privacy, different walls. Let me ask you, we've got 2 minutes to close now. Where does Kabu go from here, and how do they find you?
They find us at kabu.com, or they can email me directly at, you know, info@kabu.com, or that'll come in generally, and I'll get it, as well as, and it's K-I-B-O-O. And where do we go from here is we have launched as a direct-to-consumer product, and so we are in the front lines and working and meeting with and changing our product to meet ever-changing demands of our consumer. We are becoming more focused on the needs of parents and their parents to communicate with their kids about money, because they're staying at home longer and they're staying, you know, even grandparents supporting their kids, we're finding. So what are ways that we can help those communications? And we're also looking to work with the banks to open up or to bring our technology into the banks to introduce to their customer base.
Wow. Well, we want to track the progress. This has been a terrific interview. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks. It's great being here.
So next week, we're going to do something completely different. We're going to look at global corporate governance. What does that mean to a transborder company? Does it matter to you? Does it matter to your investments in your portfolio? Charlie Cobb is going to be back on this show again and a surprise guest. So please tune in. Meanwhile, please let me know what you'd like us to talk about. Please suggest guests for me to interview. And please look for me at globalreach-sbi.com. Send me emails to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. On behalf of Lisa Halpern and myself, we both wish you great success in extending your global reach.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.